Welcome to the Resilient Training Lab podcast.
All right, another episode of Resilient Training Lab podcast. We're going to do part two of majoring in the minors today. So we're going to cover nutrition, fat loss, and hypertrophy. Hopefully we can get all this in one episode. If it runs a little long, this might turn into a two-parter, but we'll try and get everything in and try and stay on track. So last time we did majors and minors of exercise. So where should you invest the majority of your energy to get the most outcome? And today we will follow the same pattern for nutrition. So let's start there. Majors that we're going to run through. The first one's got to be calorie balance, right? I don't think we can talk about this without first going into balancing energy.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you know, you always hear people talking about like, oh, at the end of the day, it comes down to calories in versus calories out, which is true. You know, obviously, it's a little more nuanced than that. And there's a lot of factors that go into both calories in and calories out. But the blanket statement does hold true, even though it doesn't kind of touch on the sensitivities of nutrition and the nuance of it, which is what turns people off from that phrase. But I think, you know, in the big picture, you just can't escape it. It's the law of thermodynamics, right? Energy cannot be created nor destroyed. So it needs to go somewhere. So at the end of the day, in the most simple terms, the most important thing is that you are paying attention to that calorie balance in some form and doing something to track, you know, whether you're in a surplus or deficit or kind of maintenance calories in terms of how many calories you're taking in versus how many calories you're expending in a current day. Because if you're taking in more calories than you're expending, you're going to gain weight no matter which way you slice it. If you take in less calories than you're expending, you're going to lose weight no matter what way you slice it. And if you're taking in about the same amount of calories as you're burning, you're probably not going to change in weight.
Yeah, so really quick, the foods that we eat provide energy to our body. We measure those in calories. And then our body has a set number. It's not set, it's dynamic. But there's a number that we can eat where our body weight will stay the same. If we go above that, like Paul said, the calories in, calories out. So this would be the scale tipping towards calories in. That would result in a net increase in your body weight. And then if the scales tip the other way, where calories in is less than calories out, your body weight would decrease. And so we very frequently see people come to the gym looking to lose weight. It's more often than not lose weight. Sometimes weight gain happens, but by and large, the biggest goal that we see is weight loss in the beginning. And so that is unachievable without a calorie deficit by definition. So like you cannot lose weight without a calorie deficit because the definition of a calorie deficit is you are losing weight. So what are some ways that people, or like what are some tricks or like, I don't know, what's deceptive on like social media, right? That tells people like, oh, you don't have to focus on calories. You should focus on X. Like what is X?
Yeah. So you see a lot of different things around people trying to just not talk about calories or make less importance of calories. And for 99% of people, calories is going to be, you know, 99% of your success or failure. And oftentimes you'll see people talking about how you need to either like watch the source of the macronutrients that you're taking in. So like limiting your carbs or limiting your fats. I don't think I've seen a diet that makes you limit your proteins. That'd be really stupid, but
probably out there, dude.
But there's a slew of famous diets that have come to popularity by claiming that if you just eliminate or significantly reduce your intake of carbohydrates or fat, that you don't really need to worry about your calories. You'll just lose weight, whether it be from whatever, you know, magical pathway they decide that their diet works through.
It's usually magic.
Yeah.
It has to be magic. So
magic disguised behind big words.
Right. And usually the person has you want to say they have a decent understanding of physiology to be able to talk about this stuff, but the fact that they're blatantly lying about, you know, calories don't matter, and like sugar does, like they clearly don't have that great of an understanding, or they're just being deceptive and trying to sell you their product, which is probably more likely the case.
Yeah, you see that a lot with people promoting certain, like, I don't know, quote unquote superfoods, or eating like certain supplements that will kind of make you lose weight. Whether, I don't know, I can't even think of what, I try not to involve myself with those. Like the detox teas and the, I think mushrooms are the new one right now. I think they're kind of trying to sell everybody is
like magic mushrooms.
That would work probably a lot more efficiently than than the mushrooms that they're selling.
Yeah, they like the less fun mushrooms. So when it comes to a lot of these, I just totally derailed myself.
Yeah.
All right, so calorie balance, so like you brought up superfoods, right? And with these superfoods, you know, what the hell is a superfood? So I don't know how you define it, but people like to call these superfoods like they're magic. And again, you eat a sweet potato and you'll lose weight. I usually see them just labeling foods that are very dense in micronutrients as superfoods. And so the difference between macronutrients and micronutrients, macros are your carbs, your fats, and your proteins. And your micros are like vitamins and minerals and other things that are important but don't actually contain energy.
Yeah, so, and it's interesting because like the superfoods, or what they say are the superfoods, aren't necessarily bad, but they're not bad at all, I guess. I don't think there's really any such thing as a bad food, but that's another tangent to go on. But they like you said, they're high in micronutrients, so they're good to have in your diet. And you know, that's something else that's probably the next layer of like complexity that you would start to add once you really start to nail down calorie balance and calories, is your micronutrients and getting enough fruits and vegetables during the day. But to sell that, this idea that you need to be eating certain foods or taking certain superfood supplements is just a little far-fetched. I think the main idea here is it doesn't need to be complicated. We just want you to get a variety of fruit and vegetables, you know, preferably with every meal that you eat. The more kind of, there's no really ceiling here. The more fruits and vegetables you can eat, the probably better off you're going to be. So really starting to fill plates up with, you know, greens and some fruit throughout the day. And I think, you know, on that topic is sometimes you see people villainizing fruit, right?
That, unfortunately, yeah.
And like fruit is, yeah, it has sugar in it, but you know, I guess we can zoom out even more and talk about that. Is that fear of sugar. It's like nothing's bad in moderation. The problem with sugar is that it's hyper palatable and you can eat a ton of it and, you know, not really get filled. And it's easy to rack up the calories when you're eating sugar, but that doesn't make it bad if you're eating it in moderation. Like there's no problem having, especially fruit, because I mean, it's loaded with micronutrients, and I was going to say they're natural sugars, but there's really no difference between natural and processed sugars. Our body doesn't know the difference at the end of the day. It all gets broken down to glucose, right? So your body can't tell the difference between what type of sugar you take in. And at the end of the day, it ends up at the same spot. And, you know, there are times sugar can be beneficial. And, you know, as long as you're not over consuming and tipping the calorie balance is what it really comes back to, then sugars are nothing to be afraid of. Enjoy them in moderation. You don't have to like limit yourself and kind of fall into that trap, because that just becomes unrealistic and usually leads to a harsh rebound in the other direction.
Right. Literally 20 minutes ago, I had 400 calories from two granola bars. Like in order for me to eat 400 calories of fruit, that's like five apples, or I could have had an apple, a banana, two oranges, and some grapes. Like there are so many hyper palatable foods, foods that are easy to eat in large amounts. So it's easier to overconsume the calories. And that's exactly what Paul is getting at. So 400 calories of granola bars leaves me sitting here like, oh, I could probably still eat. Whereas if I had had 400 calories of fruit, I would likely be very full or discomfort just from the volume of food in my stomach. So it can get pretty complex, right? Not all calories leave you feeling the same way. People like to, again, villainize certain groups or macronutrients or sources of food or sources of energy and sugar and fat and whatnot. So there are some, I don't want to say some truths to what they're saying, right? Because it's like, we don't need to be afraid of sugar, but sugar is more easily consumed from cookies and ice cream and cake because of all the extra calories and the large, like how tasty it is what it comes down to.
Yeah, I always, you know, I find it interesting, you know, when the calorie balance talk comes up and that like hyperpalatable foods comes up. And like in theory, you could lose weight eating solely Pop-Tarts, right? If your calorie balance was in check. But you probably feel like shit.
This is the if it fits your macros crew in a nutshell. Like the if it fits your macros crew is hit your macros regardless of what foods you eat and you'll lose weight or whatever. And Paul is heading into this, like, that's absolutely true, but you will feel like shit.
Yeah, like, you're not going to be full and satisfied because you're not going to be able to eat enough Pop-Tarts to make that happen and still fit your macros. You're going to get no micronutrients, and you're just not going to feel great. So it's like, yeah, calorie balance is the foundation of all of this, but we need to add in some substance so that we don't, so we feel satisfied and so that we feel, you know, good and have energy. And, you know, there are some micronutrient requirements that we need to hit. And I don't think you would hit them if you were eating just Pop-Tarts. I don't know. They might be enough fortified enough nowadays that you would, but still.
If you only ate the organic Pop-Tarts, whatever that brand is, you wouldn't, because organic means they can't fortify it with the good stuff.
Yeah. And that's, you know, there's another miners, right? That organic food movement is everybody kind of says that you need to be eating organic to be healthy. But when you look at the research, you know, there's no really difference between eating organic and non-organic. And if you really would want, if I really kind of made the argument or had to make the argument, I would go out on a limb and say that organic might be even more harmful than non-organic because it raises the prices, which, you know, raises the barrier to healthy eating for people. If somebody goes to the grocery store and they're like, oh, I can't afford these organic vegetables, so I might as well just not buy any vegetables. Like, no, that you'd be great with regular vegetables or even canned vegetables, frozen vegetables. Like, you don't, like, they're all good for you. Like, they all have their micronutrients. You don't need to be searching out organic food. And then there's the whole argument of whether or not organic food's actually better for the environment due to the increased need for resources and energy to, you know, and space to kind of grow the food, and whether or not that's, you know, the trade-off is even worth it.
This is where we're heading with lab-grown meat, right? You know, if we talk about beef, the amount of resources necessary to get a pound of beef from a cow to a shelf, independent of the ethical implications of that, is how much more efficient and less resource intensive it is to grow meat in a petri dish. Would you eat lab grown meat?
Yeah, I think, you know, people are scared of genetically modified food, but we've been genetically modifying food forever. And, you know, just the pure act of selectively breeding and cross-pollinating is genetically modified food. You know, that doesn't happen naturally in nature. So, you know, since we started to, stop, kind of transferred from being hunter-gatherers and started to settle and started to kind of become farmers, there's been genetically modified food since then. So it's like, it's not any different than cross-pollinating or selective breeding, things that people kind of find normal, but, you know, at the end of the day, those are genetically modified foods. So what's the difference?
Right. And like beyond that, my timeline is a little shaky. I want to say it was was it the Great Depression, or they were fortifying bread and whatnot with iron?
Yeah. Yeah, and then
iodine
in the water for a while, and then they started kind of with milk, you know, they started be putting in some of the vitamins and minerals that were lost in the defattening, skimming process, whatever you could, whatever they do to make whole milk not whole milk anymore.
What does this go along with? This goes along with the chemicals, right?
Yeah, so you know, that's the next argument, is that you don't want to be putting these chemicals in your body, these genetically modified chemicals. But if you zoom out and you look at chemistry as a subject, everything we put in our body is a chemical. When you look at like an apple, you can break down the chemicals in an apple, and it's a very long list. And if you read them, they'd be long, scary words that you aren't familiar with. And, you know, somewhere floating on Instagram, there is a post, and it's an ingredient list of chemicals, and it's of this long list. And at the bottom was like, would you eat this food? You scroll to the right, and it's a picture of an apple. Like, that was the ingredient list for the apple, man. Like, and in the comments, everyone's like, no, look at all those big words. And it's like, everything we consume is a chemical. So you can't be afraid of consuming chemicals. And a lot of the chemicals we do consume are some of the most researched chemicals there are. Let's take a specific example of artificial sweeteners. There's this fear of artificial sweeteners, you know, whatever, giving you cancer, whatever they say, because of it's a chemical, right? And you don't want to be consuming too many chemicals. But artificial sweeteners are some of the most research chemicals in the world, and it's been beaten to death, like meta-analysis after meta-analysis, showing that there's no harmful side effects of any normal consumption of artificial sweeteners. I forget the exact number, but it was, you had to drink like 4 to 5 12 packs of Diet Coke a day to get near the range where you start to have any side effects,
which is usually like minor stomach concerns.
Yeah, so don't drink 5 cases of Diet Coke. You know, I think that comes back to a theme in nutrition, is like anything and everything's probably okay for you in moderation. I think the only thing that like people unanimously agree you shouldn't be consuming are trans fats.
That's a good one. Yeah, I mean, this artificial sweetener thing really gets me, because it's been shouted as much as I can remember in my entire life, along with what you said about the chemicals. I think it just stems from a lack of knowledge and information in the subject, making it easier to create fear and make people afraid so that they buy a different product, right? It's not, just comes down to, go ahead.
I think that's just like personified by, you know, mainstream media. You know, their job is to create fear and create emotion around stories. And, you know, they'll get a hold of these studies about artificial sweeteners that show that there's side effects at these super, super, super high doses. And then they'll write this article about how you shouldn't be drinking artificial sweeteners because look at all these side effects that it has, and no mention of the dose that these people were given before they had that side effect. And then people share the article and it becomes like common knowledge, and everybody's like, hey, that, remember that New York Post article about artificial sweeteners? Like we shouldn't be eating those. And it's like, well, a reporter that has no background in, you know, science reporting about science.
Yeah, you find out that the subjects had 500 Splenda packets in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe that amount can create some short-term side effects, but nobody's consuming anywhere near that amount, right? It's like, yeah, your belly's going to hurt if you have 50 apples in an hour, but it's not the apples, dude. Yeah. So,
I'm sure Kobayashi's belly hurt plenty after.
Yeah. What was this? I don't even know. Can Joey Chestnut. Yeah. Like 80 to 100 hot dogs and
12. Yeah.
Do they still do that? I haven't.
Yeah. Joey won this year. He's like,
he's been on top for decades.
Yeah. Yeah. Since Kobayashi got arthritis in his jaw.
So anyway, we're veering off track, but when it comes to nutrition, regardless of what your goals, like we talked about, calorie balance is going to be most important. So only you can dictate where you want the scale to go. If you want it to go up, consume more calories than your maintenance level. If you want to stay the same, consume the same. And if you want to lose weight, consume fewer calories than your maintenance level. And then we brought up fruits and vegetables. They're a really good way, or they are really good food choices to make it easier to not overconsume, right? Because we talk about keeping us feeling full, and a lot of people just, it comes down to them struggling to control hunger, right? It's like they're too hungry and they eat. And so fruits and vegetables can be a really nice way to get you feeling full while simultaneously eating fewer calories, which again would just help reinforce that behavior change, because there's less of that feeling of hunger, less opportunities to, I don't want to say give in to cravings, because like you should have the foods that you like and that you want, but in moderation. So protein is another one that can help control calorie balance, and it has some other benefits to it.
Yeah, so I think on that topic, vegetables are probably the one thing every person up until these carnivore people came about in the nutrition world agreed that you should be
fucking Marty Bell.
Yeah, that you should be eating a shit ton of. So, you know, the fact that all these different diets and fads and have come and gone, and the one mainstay has been vegetables, that kind of says a lot too in terms of how important those are, and the fact that, you know, so it's one of the few things that, you know, I think science unanimously agrees on is eat your damn vegetables.
Pretty much anything that you were encouraged to do as a child is likely still good as an adult.
Vegetables. Which brings us to protein, right? So protein is going to be probably the one thing you should start to look at once you get your calories and your vegetable intake under control, because protein is going to be kind of the key to gaining or maintaining lean muscle mass as you gain or lose weight. So there's some research out there that shows if you are losing weight and you are eating, I forget exactly how much was in the study, but let's say it was like 1 gram per pound of body weight. It was actually pretty high, I remember that, versus a group that was eating, I think it was somewhere around like 0.4, 0.5 grams per pound of body weight. And they lost the same amount of weight over the period of time, each group, because, right, calorie balance rules all. And at the end of the day, it comes down to how many calories were they in a deficit. And everybody was in the same deficit. So everyone lost, not everyone lost the same amount of weight, but it averaged out between the two groups, right? But there's always some individual variability. Oh yeah, so the group that ate the high protein, they lost, I want to say, like 80 to 90% fat mass and only about 10% of lean body mass, which would be your muscles. Whereas the group that had the low protein, they lost, I think it was close to 60% of muscle mass, of lean body mass, and 40% of fat mass. So in terms of weight loss and then the health benefits of having lean body mass, I don't know if you actually are healthier, right? If you lost a bunch of weight, but 60% of it was muscle, like, did you really do yourself a service? Because you lost so much lean body mass, and that is much, much, much harder to build than it is to lose body fat. And you are now at a lighter weight and people are labeling you as healthier, but your lean body mass is significantly lower, which there are severe health implications with. So it's very important that you keep your protein high to make sure you conserve your lean body mass while you lose weight, because there's that dual health benefit there, right? There's a health benefit to losing weight and being at an appropriate weight for your height. And there is health benefits of having high amounts of lean body mass. So we want to try and protect lean body mass at all costs. And the best way to do that is to ensure that you're eating enough protein throughout the year.
To expand on that a little bit more, when most people come to the gym and they say they want to lose weight, a lot of times they want to look different in the mirror. And if we are simultaneously losing fat and muscle, what you're seeing in the mirror is likely a smaller version of yourself that has the same proportions. So your belly isn't getting smaller relative to your shoulders or your legs. It's everything is shrinking, but your belly will still be a larger or just as large proportionally, right? So what we're really talking about when people say they want to lose fat, and this is in like 99% of cases, or sorry, when they want to lose weight in like 99% of cases, they're saying they want to lose fat, right? They want to see more of their muscle. They want to be quote unquote toned. These are the words that are used with us on a daily basis, but people don't they haven't been taught yet that what they're really looking for is a reduction in body fat. And some people do know this. And if we're simultaneously losing fat and muscle, the ratios aren't changing. So we need to make sure that we're holding on to as much muscle as we can while losing fat. And so if you've listened to this for our podcast for any extended amount of time, you've likely heard us go on and on about how important strength training is for reducing chronic disease, for improving long-term health outcomes, for decreasing all-cause mortality. And strength requires us to have muscle. So if we're losing muscle, we're not getting strong, we're getting weaker. And overall, like Paul said, we're likely doing more harm than good to our long-term health. And so the way that we do preserve our muscle mass while in a calorie deficit is we need to keep strength training, we need to keep training hard, and we need to make sure we're consuming enough protein. So just wanted to go into that a little bit more. Most of these studies, well, first, I had a question. Do you happen to remember if the people in that study were lifting weights when they were at like 0.4, 0.5?
I don't know. Ben House just posted a clip of him talking about it. It was one of the research reviews we did a while ago, but I just remembered it because I literally saw Ben House talking about it on Instagram like a day ago.
For sure. And so when these studies are doing research into like weight loss and body composition and lifting weights, in general, what you'll see is what the recommended amount of protein is, it's going to be in grams per kilogram body weight. So what I remember seeing, what sticks out the most to me, is we want to make sure that if we're lifting weights, we have around 1.6 grams of protein per kilogram body weight. So if you're 220 pounds, you're 100 kilos, you want to have 160 grams of protein. And that's sort of like, that's the low end. We definitely don't want to go under that. On the higher end, what we see recommended for strength training athletes, well, actually the higher end is like 3 to 4 grams per kilogram. And there were no negative side effects to that amount of protein. So again, if you're 50 kilos, so just over 100 pounds, you could be eating 300 to 400 grams of protein and like your kidneys will be fine.
Yeah. So, so that's the concern, right? Is that there's a detriment to eating too much protein, right? And unless you have a pre-existing kidney issue, there's no evidence that eating too much protein is bad for you. In fact, there's a lot of evidence that shows the more protein you eat, the better off you are, especially when you're losing weight. So when you're gaining weight, right, it's, you know, people usually actually think about this backwards. It's like when you're gaining weight, it's less important to have as much protein. You can get away with being a little bit on the lower end because you're on a calorie surplus, right? And you're have all this extra energy for recovery and to use for energy and all, etc. Whereas if you're in a calorie deficit, you're going to want to bump up towards the higher end of that protein intake because you're going to be losing weight, you don't have as the excess energy for recovery, and you're going to be more taxed, and that protein is going to be even more important. And there's a couple other kind of factors that go into play there as you start to get more and more in a calorie deficit. So one of those, which is just this the how filling protein is, and being able to eat more protein and be more full is huge. So if you're losing weight, protein becomes even more important than at other times.
When you're losing weight, typically the higher the protein, the higher the percentage of weight loss will come from fat And so you will retain more muscle mass, and you work so hard for what you got. So you don't want to lose it because you didn't feel like eating protein. And I think a big problem here is, like, if I were to log on to MyFitnessPal, it would, and I put my calories in at like 2,500, it would tell me to eat 80 or 90 grams of protein in a day. And that's just ridiculous. So is there a percentage of total calories that you typically look for when you're consuming protein, or do you kind of narrow down that protein range based on your body weight and then adjust your calories around it?
Yeah, definitely the latter is the kind of sequence here, is that we're going to be kind of looking at calorie balance, adding fruits and vegetables in. Then we're going to be figuring out what the minimum amount of protein you need is and making sure that you're hitting that requirement, and then letting you fill in the rest of your calories kind of as you see fit, or whatever floats your boat or you find the most satisfying. Is, I think there's this common misconception that dieting, I don't like that word, it's just kind of eating healthy, eating like an adult. I don't even like eating healthy, just don't eat like an adult. has to be miserable and has to be like restrictive, and you have to be hungry and miserable all the time. And that's just not true. Like, you can eat amazing foods and eat the foods you crave and still lose weight or maintain weight, or, well, especially if you want to gain weight. And it comes back down to calorie balance, making sure your protein's in check. And then you have that room to play with and fill as you see fit, like whatever makes you the happiest. Like,
I would say we have at least maybe like 10, 15 more minutes, right? It's looking like we're going on long enough. This is going to turn into two episodes. So maybe we can hammer home like one or two more miners and then go over some practical tracking tips, because you have religiously tracked your food for a while. And I've recently started tracking again. And so maybe we can offer some steps to get people going if it's something they're interested in they haven't already done.
Yeah. So I think the next kind of interesting minor, and it's definitely a minor, but that's not to say that it doesn't matter at all, is nutrient timing, right? Is that people get caught up like, oh, when should I eat this? Or when should I eat that? I need to eat 30 grams of protein within 10 minutes of finishing my workout, or else the workout doesn't count. Like, you hear all sorts of things like this. And like, when does nutrient count timing matter? And how much does it really matter?
The way that I describe it to clients more often than not is, unless you are doing multiple competitions or like multiple performances in the same day, your timing probably doesn't matter. And so what I mean by that is, let's say you're a college football player and you lift weights at 5:30 in the morning, and then you have practice at 2 o'clock. You want to be training really hard because it's important for you as an athlete to be strong. So you need to be prepared to train like at 5:30 in the morning. But then let's say your training session is an hour. You have from 6:30 to 2 to get ready to go perform again. It's a different physical demand playing the sport, but it still requires you to perform at a high level. And so if you want to recover as much as possible in those, you know, 7-8 hours, if you have 7 to 8 hours to recover, that's when your timing matters. You want to be getting in certain amounts of calories, carbs, and protein very, very quickly after your workout, and then on a pretty regular schedule leading up to 2 o'clock, so that you're as recovered as possible. But if you work out Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, like, it doesn't matter. If you're working out once per day, as long as you're meeting your overall needs, like your total calories, your total protein, you're getting your vegetables in, as long as you meet those needs every 24 hours, your body will take care of the rest for you.
To further that thought, it's like, can nutrient timing make a little bit of a difference? Potentially, maybe a couple percentage point difference. But is that going to show up in noticeable differences for 99.9% of people? Probably not. It's probably going to be minute changes that you don't really notice. Whereas maybe an elite athlete, someone who is trying to break world records or really trying to be perfect, and, you know, this is something they really enjoy the process of and digging down into, and their calorie balance is perfectly in check. They're eating like 12 plus servings of fruits and vegetables a day. They're hitting their protein every day. They do it without thinking about it. Then maybe that person can start to think about nutrient timing and kind of the macronutrient ratios and playing with them to see what they perform best with. But outside of that, which is, you know, 1% of the population, there's really no need to kind of go into that nutrient timing unless you're that person Ryan was describing working out twice a day.
And that's a college athlete example, right? If your goal is fat loss, you don't need to be working out twice a day. Let's just put that in there. The 10 workouts a week aren't why you're not losing fat or why you are losing fat.
Yeah, there's no reason to really work out twice a day unless you are an athlete or maybe for like scheduling purposes, you have like 30 minutes in the morning and 30 minutes at night.
Yeah, if you're a new parent or something and your kid's like taking a nap and you finally have time to do your conditioning, like cool, do that. But like Paul said, we're really talking, I think what happens with anything that we've talked about today with regard to these minors is that like, yes, they might make a fraction of a percentage of difference or 1% difference for most people. And that just gets exaggerated into like this big like hoopla in that it'll help someone sell a product. Like, look, you have to have this protein within this amount of time. It's like, do you really think that, you know, some professional bodybuilder has huge levels of like muscular development and hypertrophy because he had that shake 10 minutes after he trained? Or is it because he trained his ass off or she trained her ass off for decades and consistently hit 200 grams of protein a day for decades, and that's why they look the way that they do?
Those things are almost like they end up causing more complication than they're worth for most people. So it's probably something that you don't need to pay attention to unless you are one of those two people we said, like a collegian or professional athlete or an elite level, you know, powerlifter, Olympic lifter type deal. Other than that, nutrient timing, I mean, and along those same lines is what supplements, right? Everyone's obsessed. Yeah, everyone's obsessed with what supplements they're taking. And first of all, there's very few supplements that have been proven to do anything. I think the list is very short with like a protein supplement, and that's not really doing anything particular that your diet's not doing if you're eating well. And then there's like creatine and caffeine. And that's about it. You can make some argument for like beta alanine and some of these pre-workout substances. But again, we're talking about fractions of a percentage of a difference that most people probably won't notice. And the thing is, people spend, I think the supplement industry is a, you know, multi-billion dollar industry, is people spend all of this money to potentially, maybe, perhaps, in theory, according to some dude on the internet, get a like 0.1% increase in performance or health. Yet they completely neglect and refuse to spend money on the big rocks that matter, training and consistency. And I guess that's the biggest rock of them all in all of these, especially, you know, we talked about it in the lifting one, but is adherence and consistency in doing this for a long period of time.
Yeah. And my, like the go-to is sleep. Like, go to sleep, yo. Like, there's no sleep supplement out there that's going to make up for the fact that you're sleeping 5 or 6 hours a night. Like, I'm sorry. That's it, whatever your goals are. That's 2 to 3 hours less per night where you're in a higher state of recovery, building muscle. That's 2 to 3 extra hours where you're awake, where you might start over consuming food. Like, whatever your goal is, you can't fuck it up while you're sleeping. So, like, go to bed. That
is a very good point. Not to mention the plethora of benefits to literally every aspect of your body and mind that come along with getting a good night's sleep. Literally every single thing in your body is affected by sleep.
Yeah, but you know, gotta watch one more episode, right? My friends always joke around because I will always say like nothing productive is happening after 8 o'clock. Like, I don't care who you are, like, you're just sitting there watching TV, you're scrolling on your phone, so like, just go to bed at 9. Yeah. So supplementation doesn't take the place of sleep. Protein supplements don't take the place of like just hitting your protein goal. They can help if you're having a hard time and you don't have readily available sources of protein. That would be a scenario where it would be beneficial. But in terms of things that you outright need, nothing. But like,
the answer is in the name, right? It's supplement. It's called supplements for a reason. They're supposed to supplement a good diet, not not take place of.
Yeah. Without a doubt. So, yeah. So those are the minors. I think we had some pretty good stuff there. And moving on, let's say somebody after listening to this wants to start tracking. What would you say are like the first necessary steps to do that? Like, where should the effort go?
Well, the first thing you need to do is download an app. So yep. There's a bunch of them out there. MyFitnessPal, Chronometer, My Macros. There's a bunch of them. You don't need to pay for any of them. The free version will be fine. You don't need to see like your macronutrient percentages or anything. We're just concerned about those two metrics, right? Calorie balance and protein. From there, it can be very intimidating to have to put in everything you eat into this tracker. But at the same time, it's not very important. It's pretty important that you track pretty much everything that goes into your body, or at least do it consistently where you're using the same entries for the same foods as you go along, right? The numbers themselves aren't necessarily super important. It doesn't like, there's a lot of hate on tracking because like, oh, like the calories might be off on that. Like you don't know if that tracker is right. And it's less important about the exact number than it is about the consistency. Things about like accuracy and reliability and like using a tracker might not be accurate to the exact number, but it's reliable over a period of time. So you can compare it to the data in there as long as you're consistent with how you're putting the stuff in. And then you can track your weight to see if you're losing or gaining weight and compare it to the calories you're consuming and kind of get a general idea of where you're at. These numbers are dynamic. You're burning different amount of calories every day. So it's not an exact science. And I think people get caught up in that is they want it to be perfect. Like, oh, I had to eat 100 grams of protein today and I only ate 99, and they like freak out and like, I failed. Like I didn't do it right. It's like, no, like the only failure is not putting everything you ate in there. So the goal is just to get everything in there first and not worry about anything else. Don't worry about what the calories are. Don't worry about what the protein is. Just get in the habit of starting to put everything in there. And I mean, I'm going to be honest, it sucks at first, especially because a lot of the foods you eat or the meals you make might not be like directly in the tracker, but you can make meals and put all the ingredients in there and put it into servings. And once you start to compile the stuff that you normally eat, you don't have to think about it much. You just kind of click the button because it's like the same thing you normally eat. Like people don't eat that many different foods. like people probably have like 7 meals tops that they go to. Most people less. Like once you get those meals in there, it's so simple to just click the meal and put how many servings you had. So it's just getting over that initial hump, accepting that it doesn't need to be perfect off the bat, and making sure you track those little things, that cookie you took passing by your coworker's desk, the quarter of a donut that you ate when one of your clients brought in donuts, the creamer that you put in your coffee. Those are the things that often get missed and people start to get frustrated that it's not working, when in reality it's all the little things they're missing, the bits and bytes that push them over the edge.
Along the lines of what you said, where things don't have to be perfect, if my calorie goal was 2300 there were days where I tracked everything that went into my mouth before dinner time. And I knew I had, you know, 700 or 800 calories less. And I had no idea what was in my dinner, but I knew because of the portions and from tracking in the past that there's no way that it was like an 800 calorie dinner, right? It was, you know, it wasn't terribly complex, but it was like some amount of vegetables. And like, I didn't weigh my vegetables, right? But vegetables have calories. But I knew that plus or minus 50 wasn't going to throw me over the 700 calories that I had left. So,
yeah, I was going to say that like you almost don't have to track things like vegetables that have no calories. But for some people that might complicate it, it's like, oh, should I track this or should I not track this? Like, probably should, if you're in doubt, just track it. But things like vegetables that have very low calories probably aren't going to make a difference for you unless you're about to like step on stage for a bodybuilding show.
And like one other area that I got hung up on for like half a second, and I was like, wait, this doesn't matter for where I'm at, was like fruit. You know, it's like when you're weighing a strawberry, there's a lot of water that could be variable in like certain strawberries, or like, you know, if they sat out for longer, they would be more dehydrated. So you can measure them by cup, but then it's like, well, how much space is in between each strawberry because of the shape of them? And so it's like, there are going to be errors. It's just important to be consistent with what you're consuming over time. So if I'm always having strawberries, there might be one day where, you know, I have slightly more than I realized, one day where I have slightly less, and it all balances out in the end.
Well, and it, you know, like I was saying before, it doesn't matter as long as you're consistent with it. Is like, if you, I don't know, eat out at a certain restaurant every weekend.
Chipotle.
Right? Yeah. Chipotle has their calories in all the trackers, but I'm thinking like something that doesn't have their calories in it. And it's like, I don't know, say you go out to have pasta every Friday night and you get a big ass bowl of whatever, like the house special pasta is that night. Can you track those calories exactly? Do you know what's in there? No, but like, if you use the same thing to take that place of that meal every time you put it in your tracker, you're creating consistency. And although that number isn't accurate, it's reliable because it's this, you're using the same thing every time. Even though you may be taking in 1,200 calories each meal and what you're putting in is only 1,000 calories, like it doesn't matter because it's consistent over time. So that's the same thing with the strawberries and whatever else you're measuring. Is it, as long as you're measuring it the same way every time, it doesn't make a big difference what that final number is because you're just comparing it to your progress in either direction.
You touched on this. The biggest source of frustration because you feel like you're doing something, but you're not seeing results, is not tracking everything. Like if you're going to do this, go in all the way. Don't take handfuls of nuts and not weigh them. Fats are really easy to overconsume. Don't eat half of the, you know, bowl of mac and cheese before you give the rest to your kid and not track it. Like if you're going to do this and invest energy in it, do it all the way. Otherwise, you're going to have whatever 500 to 1,000 extra calories creeping into your diet that you're not tracking. You're going to think you're doing everything right. But because you're not tracking everything, you're not actually in a deficit. So you're putting all this energy in and you're not seeing progress.
Right, the end of that Capri Sun pack, that last chicken nugget.
You know, there could be 5 to 10 instances of that. That could be 30 to 100 calories each time, right? So it's so easy to overlook the little stuff and get frustrated with this. And trust me, if you're tracking and you're in a deficit and you're not losing weight, you're not tracking accurately and you're not in a deficit.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing is nobody knows how many calories they're burning. So what a deficit is for you is going to be different. And I hear people all talking, I'm just like, oh, I'm eating 1200 calories and I'm not losing weight. I'm like, well, you're either not moving at all or you're tracking wrong. And it's not bad that you're tracking wrong. Keep tracking the way you are. That's fine. But you have to lower your calories and know that just because it says 1200 calories, you're probably consuming more than 1200 calories. So it's like, we have no idea how many calories we're burning. The only way we can get a somewhat of an idea is by knowing how many calories we're consuming and looking at what our weight is doing. And even then it's like averages over long periods of times, because there's going to be days you burn more calories. There's going to be days you burn less calories. There's going to be days you're more active or less active. So those swings don't really make a difference because some days are going to be up, some days are going to be down, which is why it's not why you shouldn't be tracking how many calories you burn via a Fitbit or whatever watch you have. Is one, they're not accurate, and two, it doesn't matter, and three, you'll be tempted to kind of make up those calories with food. Oh, I burned extra calories today. I can get away with eating extra, which isn't the case.
Outside of like major lifestyle changes, like you go from a desk job to working for the UPS or USPS and you walk your route, you're likely not going to see massive swings in physical activity. Like I always tell people that they likely come into the gym, and even if their workout's a little different, they are willing to push themselves to like the same level of effort most of the time. They aren't going to, you know, come in one day and absolutely dog it, and then the next day, you know, try their ass off like they're training for the Olympics. So like you said, we're getting repetitive now, but it all balances.
Yeah. So the other big complaint I see kind of when people start tracking is eating out and not being able to track those foods. I kind of touched on before, just put something in there that's close and just be consistent with it over time. Don't get caught up in having to be perfect. That's definitely one of the big holdups for people. And you have to kind of push over that initial bump and get those foods that you normally eat logged in so that you can put them in correctly. You'll need a scale so that you can actually weigh and measure your food. There's not really a way around actually weighing it if you want to track calories. There's some tricks with the scale, as if you're using like a jar like peanut butter or something like that, is to put the jar in and then tear it at zero and then pull whatever you want out, and the difference is how much you ate. It's way easier to measure things that way for a lot of things. After a while, you start to get very comfortable with how much you're consuming, and you probably don't need to track as tightly, especially if you're one of those people that eat pretty much the same thing day in and day out. Like, I don't know, I use Carlos as an example because he's a robot. He literally eats the same thing every day and he enjoys it. It's not everyone who's always like, aren't you miserable? I'm like, no, he's a good cook. He knows how to cook rice really yummy and meat. And to lose weight or gain weight, he knows like, hey, I just have to add in a half a cup of rice to this meal and I'm going to start gaining weight. I take away a half a cup, I'm going to start losing weight, because he's just so consistent. Like, he doesn't actually have to track calories. So it's possible to get to that point, but you have to put in the work first.
I'm sure you know what 2 cups of Golden Grahams looks like.
I'll still weigh things just out of habit, but I'm pretty like spot on with most of the foods that I eat, just being able to pour bowls out of the correct size.
It's like finances. I always like this analogy. You can't know that you're spending less than you make unless you know exactly what you make and where all of that money is going. And it's like, you can't know that you're in a deficit unless you know everything that's going in. But this might launch us into another tangent, but it's like society labels you as obsessive if you track your food, and, oh, you can't do that because that's not a healthy relationship with your body and food. And it's like, no, it's like wanting to make changes is okay. It's like, if you want a result and you have a goal and it's important to you, that's awesome. And tracking is likely one of the steps that's necessary to get you there.
Well, to further your finance analogy is, at this, you know, nobody expects to gain like millions of dollars in 1 or 2 days, right? It takes a consistent effort of slowly putting away until you've amassed this massive amount of money that you can be proud of, right? It's the same way with nutrition. You can't just magically go from one end to the other end. You have to put in the work over a long period of time. And when you do that with money, it's considered what, like, financially literate, and there's classes on how to do it, and it's celebrated, and, you know, people
responsible,
right? Fiscally responsible. That was the word I was looking for. And people kind of celebrate that. But when you do it with your nutrition, it's something that's harmful or negative, and it just never really made sense to me. It's like, in all other aspects of life, this is kind of the accepted process, like put in the work over a long period of time. What gets measured gets managed. Like that's a businessman saying. And then we apply it to nutrition, and all of a sudden it's, unhealthy. So I think a lot of it has gotten lost in some of these kind of movements of recent. And it's like, I think it all gets mixed up because wanting to lose weight or gain weight or change your figure or put on muscle doesn't mean you don't love yourself, right? Like, you can love yourself for where you currently are, have a massive amount of respect for what you've been through and your abilities, and like genuinely have love for yourself and still want to make changes. I would almost argue that wanting to make changes is the ultimate sign of loving yourself, right? If you love yourself and you want to spend as much possible time as you can in your body loving your life, right? Wouldn't it behoove you to manage your weight and take care of your body so that you can go about loving yourself and enjoying life even more? So I think that often gets confused as people are like, oh, if you love yourself, you're just happy where you are and you don't, you know, just what is what it is. And it's like, no, if you love yourself, you're going to do everything possible to make sure you live the longest, healthiest life, most independent, functional life you possibly can. And that would be, you know, eating a healthy diet and working out.
That's the sound clip that's going on Instagram right there. I, before you started on that, I was going to say, like, you always say this is the like highest form of self-love. So hands down, absolutely 100% behind that. It's a great message. And it's unfortunate that I think a lot of people are steered away from interventions that have the possibility to change their life because they have, like, these interventions have been labeled like unhealthy and obsessive.
All right. It's a good spot to end.
Yeah. So that was majoring in the minors, part two, part one. Christian. And we'll see you next time for majoring in the minors, part two, part two.
Fat loss and hypertrophy.
Yes. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for listening.